JB and J. Savitri, everyone. I'm Thinmori Soundarajan, and this is Cast in United States with First Post. Today's episode is an exploration of caste and social media. Joining us is Prakash, one of the editors of Savarna Rehab. He's going to share with us some of his unique experiences challenging casteism online and what he has learned about the dominant caste journey to unlearning caste. Jay Beeman, welcome, Prakash.
Jay Beeman.
So Prakash, social media has been a powerful forum where DBA voices really have come to find some space in challenging Brahminical culture. As a Savarna, you've also been challenging your own networks through the Savarna Rehab page. And I wanted to ask, what are some of the trends of resistance that you see when you bring up these issues?
Thank you, Thinmori, for having me here. So you're right that social media became a great platform for many Dalit, Bahujan, and Adivasis to have their expression online. There were many other platforms as well, but on social media, they were able to reach out to larger section of the society. But also they faced the same issue that now their posts were directly in the face of Savarnas who were having a honeymoon period online because, as you know, that they felt as if that space also belonged to them, just like every other spaces. What I observed myself was that some of the bigotry was outrightly bashing people who are marginalized, but also they were glorifying their own caste origin. I observed all of this, and what I felt very bad was there were really resourceful Bahujan, Dalit, and Adivasi participants or users of social media who are also very well established activists. When they would speak of some very, you know, basic issues around caste, they would have to face a lot of trolling, lot of angry reactions. And these came from people who were supposedly college educated, but the level of questioning that they had almost felt as if they had no clue about the realities of the society. And that's when I felt like, you know, people who are from the Savarna origin should spend some time and energy and provide some labor to deal with these people who were gaslighting and also not allowing a bigger discussion to have to address. Some of us friends decided that we need to do some labor of handling this Savarna ignorance and fragility, and also to, you know, support people who are expressing these thoughts, how to support them and to validate their arguments or whatever they are trying to say.
So what do you think is some of the distinctive ways in which Savarnas use the various kinds of social media, whether it's Facebook or WhatsApp or Twitter or even TikTok?
Yeah, so I can really speak to Facebook, WhatsApp, and Twitter. In all these three platforms, maybe LinkedIn also you can add, these Savarnas have a very general behavior I have observed, is they change their tone based on the anonymity they are getting or also the environment they are in. So like in WhatsApp group, they know that they are exposed, but it is private to that particular group. They know who really exists in the group and who is reading their messages. So they are very open about their bigotry, and they are always sharing material that comes down to them that is, you know, it could be a casteist joke or it could be even glorifying their own heritage. If they are in a WhatsApp group of family, if they are in the WhatsApp group of their college friends, then they are already, you know, discussing as if reservations is the biggest tragedy that ever hit India. If something newsworthy happens, then they will probably look for the casteist angle to that. I mean, they will blame the Dalit, Bahujan, Adivasis for practicing casteism, and then all of them will agree. It's an echo chamber, basically. Now, if you move on to Facebook is slightly more public. So there they have a different kind of a play. Like they will either keep silent about some issues or they will either try to tone police or gaslight. But It depends, like what their circle is. Like if they are all college kids who are connected to other college students, they will probably share in private groups. They will share a lot of nasty stuff. But because like in diaspora, there are many people for whom posing as a liberal in America is very rewarding. So they will not directly make these posts, but they will do all the other things like gaslighting and tone policing or silently ignoring big issues like, for example, the case of Dr. Payal Tadvi or even this current Cisco case. They will not have any opinion about that. And in fact, they will do their best to gaslight. And then on Twitter, many of them have handles that cannot directly be connected to them, in which they are able to say things that they won't even say in front of their family, but they are able to do it in a much more hands-off way. And also because Twitter doesn't yield itself to richer discussion, you have like character limit, so it's very easy to say something nasty and run away. So that's the general trend I have observed. That does not mean that on Facebook, while running our page, I did not get a lot of horrible threats. People who assume that I am a Dalit did not come and tell me to go clean toilets, or they would come and use the slurs against me. And those have been also happening. We tried not to dox anyone, but there have been cases where we threatened them with legal action. And more often than not, some of them actually ran away because, I mean, these people are not very smart as well. Like, they have pictures of themselves on their profile. I mean, they will pose with their motorbikes or stuff like that, which clearly has a number plate on it. So it will take us like 30 seconds to get to their real name. They come with a lot of confidence, but they are themselves on a very shaky ground. So that has also happened in many cases.
And I think this is actually a really important place for us to kind of dig in more, because, you know, if you think about the internet and social media as like the id of the human species, like we really see both the light and also the darkness of, you know, how bad people behave. And some of what you're talking about here, Prakash, is that, you know, when dominant caste people are in their own spaces, there is some nasty casteism that comes out. And, you know, as a Savarna, who has been seeing this and actually, you know, went on to become one of the editors of this page, Savarna Rehab, you have been someone that has been going toe-to-toe confronting some of the contradictions that exist within the dominant caste psyche, that they would feel so confident to say Black Lives Matter at the same time as they would like say some of the most utterly casteish about reservations or about the most recent atrocity or even about Rohit Femila. And those of us in the diaspora have continually seen that dichotomy. And I think Savarna Rehab became a crossroads for where some of those discussions happened. And I'm just curious, like, if you could talk a little bit for people that never went to that page, you know, what were some of the things that you guys were trying to do? And what were your experiences in engaging with dominant caste people online through that page?
Yeah, thank you for that opportunity, because the page is purposefully, it is misleading. Title somehow says that we have a cure for dominant caste behavior, whereas it was more like a triggering page where we wanted dominant caste people to come and get a little bit of exposure to their own behavior. There are two things, right? So there's a dominant caste behavior, like you explained, the Black Lives Matter posting. So a lot of dominant caste people would like to virtue signal online and would like to appear to be liberal. And they would definitely come to our page to get some masala, because we were very meme friendly. And everybody loves to bash another version of bigots, but people rarely point the light on themselves. So there's a lot of people who would mock the orthodox casteism, but they would not be willing to introspect on the casteism that happens in their own spaces and benefits them. So even for the Black Lives Matter, we have to look at it this way, that Black Lives Matter is interesting from Savarna point of view, because for a Savarna to do some sort of virtue signaling for Blacks, because they don't have a direct oppressor relationship, if it is rewarding, they would do it. Why not? But to be able to stand up for people that are oppressed by their own class, to stand up for reservation, which is a positive discrimination, to help people who are oppressed by this Savarna's own class. It's not like this person is stupid and doing a hashtag Black Lives Matter, but not doing it for Dalits. So what we really wanted to do was to expose people to the situations in their own spaces. And initially people got attracted because we made a lot of fun of Orthodox casteism, and a lot of people jumped onto our portal thinking we are just another fun page. But the fragility started coming out when we started questioning people about their own culpability. And I mean, I should give credit to people who were not triggered by it, and they probably learned from it. But more often than not, it would come out as very, very angry responses. And the thing that I have observed and that I really was unhappy with was that even the well-meaning dominant caste people would keep quiet. They would not come and get their hands dirty, so to speak. If they could see somebody getting triggered, they would stay away and would just watch, or even for other Bahujan page members to fight with these people. So that's another level. By silence, we actually create more problems. So that's my experience on that.
So can you give me an example, Prakash, of like one of these situations that really triggered dominant caste people to feel extremely fragile on Savarna Rehab?
I can give it in two cases. So one is the Orthodox casteism triggering, and then the other is a case where we can talk about triggering in the modern secular version. So in the case of Orthodox, I think the biggest trigger point was when we shared a meme where we sort of explained how the role of a woman in the dominant caste household and how they have to instill some casteism in their children. An ideal mother of the dominant caste family is supposed to, like as Baba Sahib said, that Brahminism is negation of equality, liberty, and fraternity. We sort of mocked the fact that the role of dominant caste mother is to really instill this behavior that protects the child from learning about equality, liberty, fraternity, and other such things. That sort of exploded, and we got a lot of attacks from people who were triggered. There was actually some book writer who also came to our page, and she started saying really, really horrible thing even about Baba Sahib. We took snapshots, and then we threatened legal action against her, and then she disappeared from the internet. It was very violent, the kind of reaction we got from people who are outrightly casteist. So that's one scenario. The other scenario where we got a lot of flack was when we questioned Brahminism in the left political parties. And in that scenario also, we had a very violent attack from the online activists of those, I mean, not just the parties, but also the people who subscribe to that political ideology, or they claim to subscribe to that political ideology. They started hate campaign against our page, saying that we were supporting, you know, the right-wing politics. Or instead of understanding where we are coming from and why we are questioning casteism within their spaces, they took it as if we were attacking their whole ideology. Obviously, this comes from assuming that the dominant caste represent the ideology of left. So that was another trigger point for them, like within the medical industry, how casteism is playing a role, in which case a lot of people from the medical fraternity, many doctors, got really pissed off. We even got threatened. I mean, there was this lady who herself was a doctor who actually said something like, may your family not get a doctor when it really needs one. And I mean, you question casteism in any group and that group starts getting triggered. And that is what our observation was, unfortunately. And
yeah, it's that the topic is so taboo that, you know, when you first bring up this topic, like, it's anathema. Then it starts to trigger feelings of fragility and then outright arguments, you know. And it's a very difficult divide because this is how the silence is really built, that lays the framework for impunity. And so being able to talk about these issues, to use humor or, you know, direct confrontation, like, we have to do whatever we can to chip away at these hegemonies. But I think that, you know, there's another key part of this story, which is that Savarna Rehab was a page on Facebook. And I think that, you know, many of these social media companies are deeply casteist. And we were definitely part of an ongoing advocacy campaign to have Facebook not only add caste as a protected category on the moderation side, but also for them to really start to protect people around casteist hate speech. And I think the thing that I've seen is that not only have they failed their duty of care towards casteist and religious minorities, we are actually seeing, you know, Savarnas and dominant caste people using caste as a way to shut down speech that actually points out their caste privilege. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, if you can talk about what your experience was with Facebook and how you see its casteism playing out here.
As some of you may know, that Savarna Rehab was taken off the Facebook and we lost everything that we were building. In fact, the comments were really resourceful for some future researcher to research on how Savarna get fragile, but we lost all of it. So yeah, you are very correct when you say that introducing caste as a protected category for moderation actually backfired in some way, because if you realize that as a company, Facebook may be just doing the hiring for moderators just like any other company does in India. And obviously, this means that the representation of Dalit, Bahujan, Adivasi is abysmal in their moderation group, and they definitely do not understand, or maybe they understand, but there's a huge conflict of interest for them. So it is always going to be interpreted in incorrect way. So with Savarna Rehab, what happened was, the first time we got banned was when enough people complained when we mocked Madhavan's threading ceremony and compared it with, you know, someone glorifying the swastika. And Facebook just banned us for 3 days. And then just to test that theory, we were like, okay, is it really that? So we made another post in which all we said was, we shared a news article on Ku Klux Klan family. It was a news about some tradition they have at home. So all we said was that this reminds us of Madhavan's threading ceremony, and we got another ban. There was a time when we got banned for making a post which was nothing but Baba Saheb Ambedkar's quote, that he says that, I'll be happy if I can convince the Hindus that they are sick people of India and that their sickness is causing grave misery to the people of India. So that was his quote. And we actually also mentioned explicitly that it's his quote. But we got banned for a few more days after that. So all of this added up. And then eventually, after six such bans, Facebook just took the page off the internet. But that's the Savarna Rehab story. But the bigger story is that we did see that our reach started falling consistently. So like, when we were a page that had 10,000 followers, our posts would reach about 2,000 to 3,000 of our followers. But even when the page grew to 50,000 followers, our posts would reach to 3,000 to 4,000 people. I mean, if you look at it, as more and more people started engaging with us, our reach started falling. And it was an indication that it wasn't a welcome space to have this kind of discussion. So that's definitely an issue. Also, it's an uphill battle because you're always trying to stay under the radar of the platform to have some kind of speech. So, yes, I would agree that the platform does not help us reverse the evil system of casteism, but because it's not doing the same kind of scrutiny of the casteist groups and pages, ends up actually reinforcing the same inequality.
And I think this is a very important point because, you know, as another speaker in one of our earlier episodes talked about, you know, growing up dominant caste is itself a physical filter bubble. You know, you only interact with people of the same caste background. You tell sanitized origin stories about your own merit and, you know, what benefits you deserve and also your ability to succeed. And I think that social media just amplifies and adds gasoline to what is already a raging fire. And exactly. So I'm wondering, like, from your perspective, like, you know, what responsibility do Suvarnas now have as we see more polarization? And how can we de-escalate the fear responses of so many casteist people?
I have been struggling with this question even for myself also. What should be really be our role? In my personal spaces, I have always tried to push back on these things. But the thing that I learned there was if my physical boundaries are such that I only live within the dominant caste circles, this is not going to work. So one thing everybody needs to do is to bring down the walls that you have yourself created that stops you from socializing with other people. And then you need to follow some basic, you know, manners when you are in the company of Dalit, Adivasi, Bahujan. Primarily, like, you shouldn't be doing tone policing, gaslighting. You should be doing your own labor of learning about, I mean, everything is online. People call themselves educated, and people boast about their merit, but they can't do simple internet searches for annihilation of caste, and like they expect others to educate them without making them uncomfortable. So that's the crux of it, that people want to be educated without feeling uncomfortable. We have to give that up. Nothing about education on your own bigotry will be comfortable. So prepare to be discomforted, prepare to be questioned a lot. And also within your own circle, do not hesitate to push back on very stupid arguments. Like somehow we tolerate very stupid arguments from our elders and our teachers. Like, how do we call ourselves educated if we keep on doing that? You have to question that very basic thing. Like, if you are unaware of realities of your own society, you are exposing your own ignorance in public by saying those kind of statements. So all these need to happen because you need to argue with your own people and listen to the DBAs, whereas you are actually doing just the opposite. People are questioning the Dalit, Bahujan, Adivasi, and they are listening to the people who have been, you know, promoting this evil system. So you need to switch and be prepared to get discomforted in the process.
Well, and I think, you know, before we kind of end this episode, I think that there is one last question, which is really, Prakash, like, you've taken such a distinctive and really fierce stance around Suvarna hegemony. And I'm just wondering if you could share to our audience, like, what was the turning point for you? Why did you decide to drop your privilege?
So I should state that I am not currently in India, which helps me escape some of the conflict of interest, some of, not all, but sometimes think about this, like if I were a cloth seller in Chandni Chowk today, my entire living would be dependent upon the traders, you know, association, which would be mostly people who are baniyas. Caste would have been essential for my survival. So obviously, in those scenarios, I wouldn't have turned somebody who is trying to address caste. Because I was removed from the conflict of interest, it gave me some breathing space to sort of look at this picture in a different way. And then I happened to know somebody who is extremely successful, who is also a staunch Ambedkarite and has a very long history of activism. I happened to have a chat with this person who I had known for a long time, but I didn't know of his caste-based identity. A very frank chat with him, a very personal story helped me realize what I was missing. And it made me go back and read Dr. Ambedkar's work in a way that I was willing to question my own origin, my own complicity in the system. And then obviously the other part was that because I am in United States, there has been a lot of material on racism here and on white privilege and white fragility and all such stuff. When I was reading them, it wasn't really about me. So I was, you know, it's between black and people and the white people. So I could internalize the structural racism concept much easily because I understood in theory that what systemic oppression looks like. When I started reading Dr. Ambedkar's work, it was a slightly easier transition for me, and it was slightly easier for me to know that I should be willing to be uncomfortable. And also it was slightly easier for me because, like I said, I had already used up a lot of privileges that came with my dominant caste. Compared to somebody who is still embedded in the system, it was slightly easier for me. That's my story.
And I think this is a really important thing for our listeners to take away, is that we have more breathing room in the diaspora when it comes to caste hegemonies. Because again, no one is ever saying that caste operates in the diaspora the way that it operates in our homelands. However, as you said quite eloquently, Prakash, the reality is that we are dealing with so much embedded caste relationships as it relates to economic and interpersonal relationships. So, you know, in the freedom of the diaspora, people finally get a chance to have some critical reflection, and they get to really think, do I want to be part of a system that really dehumanizes many people? And oh my gosh, I sound like a bigot, you know, especially because they're feeling the open bigotry from white people. It gives them a point of reference and a real mirror of behavior to say, wow, if I think that's racist bigotry, isn't this also casteist bigotry?
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out. And what I may have said can be misinterpreted. I'm not saying that there is a breathing space, but also continuing on my old casteism, there is definitely a lot of advantage that is still to be had. Like if somebody comes to United States and then becomes part of a caste-based social group, there is definitely a lot to profit from. There is this inertia of your casteist practice that you can continue. But there is a chance that if you are willing to not participate in it, there is a way out of that also. It is up to you whether you take the exit or not.
I think that's really what we hope all of our listeners will do, is that they take the exit and join the large global movement to annihilate caste, because this is a time that is so pivotal. And in 2020, we have such deep choices about how we come out of this pandemic. And there's no reason for us to come out of this pandemic and also commit to continuing caste when we actually need all hands on deck to rebuild. And so it's a very powerful call for people to, you know, practice not only self-reflection, but also to act. Prakash, thank you, you know, for bringing up these points and really sharing your experiences with Savarna Rehab. We really appreciate your time and also your candidness about the journey around how hard this is, but how necessary this confrontation and engagement on social media is. So thank you again for joining us. And thank you all of our listeners who joined us from home. And we look forward to seeing you on our next episode. So thank you, and JB.